WBSM presents The Tim Meisberg Show, streaming live on WBSM.com and the WBSM app. Call 508-996-0500. Send us app chat messages and open line voicemails using the WBSM app. Now, The Tim Meisberg Show.
Welcome back. Third and final hour here on Monday morning, and that means we are joined by New Bedford City Council President Shane Burgo here on President's Day, so it's your holiday, I guess, right?
Yes, thank you.
Oh, let me turn you on there. There we go.
Thank you. Yes, I'm happy to be here.
And we got you on your day off. We got you to come in here and still do a little work.
Yes. Well, you know, as I often say, it's never really a day off when you're an elected official.
Well, and you certainly didn't have any time off last week. You had a full week of meetings and all kinds of stuff going on. So what were some of the big headlines that came out of the different meetings last week?
Yeah, so, you know, our housing meeting started off our the Special Committee on Housing, which we know now is chaired by Ian Abreu, Council-at-Large Ian Abreu. That one, we had Director Josh Amaral come in, and he's always does a great job. I often, you know, thank him for his stamina because he gets up there before the council and can stand up there for, you know, sometimes even more over than an hour, taking all of our questions. And again, we asked him, obviously, as the administration's representative regarding housing and community development. He's the director of our Office of Housing and Community Development. And essentially, a lot of it, a lot of the questions, I think, geared around the TAC report, the Technical Assistance Collaborative report. A lot of the questions I had were mainly around the shelter aspect of it, and maybe possible changes we can have to it. One of the concerns I had in particular, that some questions, which there have been some changes to it, for example, like the cold weather shelter system. I'm sure some people are aware, like if the weather dropped below a certain temperature, they activate the cold shelter, cold weather shelter. So, you know, some of my questions were around whether or not we would, you know, tweak that temperature model, because I think for a lot of us, you know, 28 degrees or 30, I believe now is the new number, 30 degrees, is still very cold, but even, you know, 32 or 35 degrees. But the challenge, I think, that we are hearing from some of the service providers that were there, like Carl Alves or Reverend Lima, were that they're not sure if they even have enough money to last them through the cold weather season. So they're not sure if they'll make it to March. And that's a concern, naturally. And so that was a big part of Monday's meeting around housing. And Tuesday's meeting, which was public safety, we had the House of Hope represent that. I would say that was a big part of our discussion there. A lot more happened at that meeting, but I would say that was probably the most impactful. Again, as I think I quipped last week, was all of our meetings pertain to housing. And so that one, again, in regards to a shelter, the House of Hope runs, which I think all of us really recognized the great work that Reverend Bob Hughes does up in the North End. But obviously, there are a lot of challenges that House of Hope faces. And so while recognizing the great work that they do, also recognizing those challenges and how we as a city council can either help support or address those challenges and maybe offer resources or figure out the plans that they have to address those. And it sounds like Reverend Hughes has it under control, which, you know, I didn't have a concern that he wouldn't have it under control. And so he already has, he's working with the administration and the health department and inspectional services to make any of the repairs that were noted in previous reports, whether it's, you know, repairing toilets that were in need of repair, roofs, the roof that I believe that was leaking, you know, different parts of the building that over time deteriorate that need to be repaired. So that, I think, was a very fruitful conversation. And also, I think, giving him the opportunity to address the public about any potential rumors that might be out there about him and really the good work that he's doing. I think a lot of times what's challenging is, as I think we all mentioned, there's a lot of people doing a lot of the same work. Oftentimes they're doing it in different ways, in different capacities. But at the same time, obviously we know there's a great need. And so it's wonderful to see everyone come together as a community and be able to help as many people as possible.
And, you know, you mentioned that some of these service providers might run out of funds. What happens if that's the case? Do they continue to operate in a deficit, or do they just have to close the doors and not be able to open?
Well, that's essentially the... nonprofits oftentimes turn to private funding. And so that's what Reverend Lima was talking about, is they're doing a lot of work to ask for donations. And so that's what a lot of places like Rise Up for Homes, which they're part of, the Continuum Care, the Bristol County Continuum of Care, that's their new name, formerly known as Homeless Service Provider Network, the HSPN. So a lot of times they resort to that. I know that they also discussed that they did request a... more funding, which I believe that they did receive more funding, but that doesn't always happen. So to make sure that they can get even more funding that is guaranteed, essentially, they do look for donations from the general public. And oftentimes that's what we will tell to people when we have the discussion around panhandling. We often say to people, if you're looking to give back, sure, obviously it's up to you what you want to do with your money, but it would sometimes be a lot more helpful for you to give to organizations like this that are willing to put this money towards something that's actually going to help get someone off the street.
Yeah, because as you mentioned, you know, the temperature is a kind of an iffy proposition to make the judgment based on, because you could have a day that's 40 degrees, but with the wind, it could feel like it's 25 degrees.
Yes. And that's, and you know, I don't envy anyone who has to make that decision. And that's, I think, the other part of the challenge, where it's like every day really could be a cold weather shelter day. But then if every day is a cold weather shelter day, you run out of the resources very quickly. And then from there, the rest of the year, what do you do on the really, really bad days when we actually have snow and the blizzard? So I understand those limitations and why they have to try to find some way to add in qualifiers for why to stretch out the money as far as they can.
And do you find that when we're in days like that, Are the police and some of the people who are, you know, in charge of these public buildings where the unhoused folks might gather, do you find that they are a little bit more kind of lenient on that during those times?
Yeah, certainly. And I think that's one of the great things about our New Bedford Police Force. They do an amazing job, triaging is the word I'll use. One of the things Reverend Hughes actually mentioned that he said, I think, great at the meeting, was that the police have enough to worry about. And so one of his standing rules he had mentioned at House of Hope is that if a police officer brings someone to them that needs shelter, they automatically get a bed. No questions asked. Police officer, you have enough to worry about. So the New Bedford police know that if they find as you mentioned, in that case where someone's out on a storefront or outside of a police station and they have nowhere to go, they know that Reverend Bob Hughes will take them in. Especially in a lot of other situations where a person, a lot of times that the police will run into or get called for because of behavioral issues or other concerns, and they might be barred from a traditional shelter space due to a whole myriad of reasons, Bob Hughes is able to take them in and work with them. So again, sometimes it's difficult to work with a non-traditional shelter space, but then in other cases it works out really well for these kind of scenarios. So I'm very thankful to our New Bedford Police Force, and obviously to all these different service providers that work in tandem to really make sure we can provide as much service as possible to those in need.
And on Wednesday was the city property meeting, right?
Yes.
And so maybe some conversation there about getting some of these properties available for development.
Yeah. So again, you know, the cogs of government move slow, but so the part of city property meeting that took place in that meeting was the portion of our government where these city properties now in our city ordinance, we have to make a motion to essentially ask any other city department before we give up these city-owned entities, we have to ask other departments, do you need these buildings for anything? They're owned by the public, and before we give them up to private entities, we have to ask essentially the public and everyone else, do you need these for anything before we sell them off, essentially. So that was what that meeting was about, was discussing those I think it was three different schools, former schools, I should say. Make that clarification, so we're not just giving away schools that children are in. Former schools that we're no longer occupying, and one other building that's, I believe, attached to the Quest Center that's also vacant. So we go through the process of making a motion to send out a letter to all department heads and other public entities to make sure that this public resource is no longer needed for municipal use. Typically, obviously, you know, they've been vacant this time. No one actually needs it. We get the, you know, letter back saying, yeah, we don't actually need this. And we say, okay, great. This formality is done. And then we go through the process at the next meeting. Once the turnaround and advertisement of making sure it's not needed comes back, we go through the process of actually opening up for the official RFP, request for proposals from private entities that we will then hope there'll be a flood of from developers saying, yes, I want to build here in New Bedford, and I want to turn all of these into housing, and here's what we're going to do, and so on and so forth. And then that process begins.
I mean, I know that that is a formal process that has to play out, but do you hear from anybody that says, gee, I'd love to get my hands on that building if it ever comes up? I mean, have you heard from any developers that have interest in these schools?
Yeah, well, so no, I haven't heard directly about these particular properties, but in general, yes. You know, you hear from the typical names, you know, the Kavanaugh Group, you know, I was going to say Verdian Gardens, but the group, I'm blanking on the actual official name, but the people who build Verdian Gardens, you see a lot of times here in New Bedford. Those are the two main ones that come to mind that often build housing here in New Bedford. And they love a lot of the times these smaller projects that are have quicker turnaround times here in New Bedford. And the best part is they're from New Bedford. They're people that are familiar with our city. They're familiar with the communities that we want to support, and they're able to really get in and build. And so that's the most important part, is we want people to build and start building right away.
And the great thing about taking old school buildings and using those for housing is it's a pretty easy conversion a lot of the time, because they're just doing interior work. Mm-hmm. They might have to shore up some of the things, you know, put a new roof on and things like that. But for the most part, the bones of the building are good. They've been standing for over 100 years in many cases, and they'll stand for another 100 as long as somebody is putting in the effort on the inside to make sure that there's some place that's livable. So you could see something like that get turned around relatively quickly.
Yeah, and that's the hope. That's really the hope. And you hit the nail right on the head. A lot of our older school buildings especially have really great, strong exteriors, and I think that's what makes them really strong and formidable when it comes to these building projects. Whether they are, obviously, housing, I think, is the number one thought process when it comes to a lot of these developments, but it really could be built for anything.
It's helpful, too, that many of them have little parking lots, too, that will help.
Yes, because as we know, parking becomes a huge issue. That's another ordinance change, I think, that we're going to have a big discussion about this year, especially now that we know MBTA is officially coming. I believe March 24th is mm-hmm. the official opening of the South Coast Rail. And so the reason why I mention that is because we talk about wanting to be a walkable neighborhood and making it so there's less need for vehicles on the road and more use of public transportation. And we also know that CERTA, our bus line that we use here in New Bedford, the region, I should say, and is free, I believe, for everyone. So having more resources, the bus line, the train, all of these available options now in a lot of the locations where larger housing being built, there should be less, I guess, need, I would say, for a vehicle, and therefore freeing up the necessity for parking That's the thought process. Although I feel that's further down the line. So that's the challenge, is it, installing that kind of parking requirement now, and then having to go through the pain of, okay, well, suffer a little bit as you get used to the fact that you need to start using public transportation. But I think people will eventually realize how great public transportation is, especially here in the city of New Bedford.
Well, and one of the things people don't take into account is say a single mom and her three kids live in an apartment, and that's great. They've only got one vehicle, so they're fine. But what happens when those kids all become of age that now they're driving too, mm-hmm. and then you've got multiple vehicles that are out there. So the more that you can kind of come up with, I guess, outside the box thinking for some of that, the better off it'll be. One question I have, what about the armory? Where are we at with the armory project?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. That's something I'd have to look into. I know that recently there was funding to, there was a part of the armory that we had, I believe it was an older garage portion of it that we, the Historical Society had us vote on to have demolished. I know that had come before us, I believe, last year. And then there were, I believe, some ARPA funds used to do that, just to help make it, again, on the discussion of parking, I believe it was to help make it so it was easier to have a design for parking, if I remember correctly. And that way it would be more desirable for a developer to come in and say, okay, great, so that part of it is done, so I don't have to worry about funding that, and then I could put parking here or what have you. So I believe it's still in the city's still in the process of making it look more appetizing for a developer to come in, essentially the exterior of it, and then that way they can come in and make the interior more of a potential use for housing. But again, as I mentioned, we often want things to be housing because that's obviously the greatest need right now. But a developer could come in and give us an RFP or request for proposal for a host of different uses. But it's up for the city and the city council to review their proposal and say, oh yeah, this could work here, or this, depending on what the zoning is for, obviously.
Well, let's just say that came up. So let's just say somebody came with a proposal that says we could turn this into apartments, or we could turn this into, a professional building where we have a number of different doctors and things that might service the neighborhood, and people could come and be walkable distance to some of these things. As the council, do you have to look at that and say, well, what's more important? Is it more important to get more apartments, more available housing, or is it more important to get these services for people?
Well, and that's exactly right. So that's the point I'm trying to make, is depending on when it comes before us, but then also what proposals are coming before us. So if we don't, there are situations we know where we have a lot of people coming before us that want to build housing. But let's say the three people that come before us with the housing proposals are people who have never built housing before. They're not reputable. The proposals that they have are, the costs are way too high and they're not obtainable, and they just don't seem as though they're actually going to work out. But then you have someone come before us and they say, yeah, we want to make these, as you pointed out, like a doctor's office, and it might be for pediatrics. And we realize this particular neighborhood has a lot of young children. And as we talked about, we want to make it more walkable neighborhood, so it's going to be easier for those individuals to walk to this pediatrician. So we have to take those factors in and say, this is less of a risk, less of a gamble. And this particular contractor said that they can get this work done in this amount of turnaround time. Those kind of things you take into account. And then also if you think about the business aspect of it, but I think a lot of times, even for myself, I will be honest, I'm going to be looking at housing more often than I would a business, an office that's going to be closed down during certain hours and not being utilized, as opposed to housing that someone could live in and actually utilize 24/7. But again, I think it just all depends on what proposals we get in, what that person's offering, the turnaround time, how long it's going to build, what limitations they have, what experience they have, and what we actually think will be obtainable for that space.
All right, well, let's take a break here. If you have any questions for Council President Shane Burgo, 508-996-0500. We can also take app chat questions as well, but right now we're going to take a break and we'll be back in a few moments. All right, we are going to go into the newsroom now with Phil Devitt. When we come back on the other side, we can take more of your phone calls, or take your phone calls You can call in and speak with New Bedford City Council President Shane Burgo, and we can talk more about some of the council business of the last week and also what's coming up as well. Again, 508-996-0500, or you can use App Chat on the WBSM app. And now let's turn things over to Phil in the newsroom.
Ukraine says it won't budge on its borders. Luigi Mangione speaking out after his arrest. And an 80s classic, good enough for a sequel.
From the Cottage Street Motors WBSM newsroom, this is WBSM News.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says the country won't recognize any of its territory occupied by Russia as part of Russia. In an interview with NBC's Meet the Press, Zelensky said no amount of negotiations will get Ukraine to change its borders. This comes after President Trump said it's unlikely that Ukraine will get back all the territory it's lost in the war as part of a peace deal. Zelensky went on to say Ukraine needs security guarantees from the U.S., emphasizing that his country joining NATO is the cheapest way to ensure regional stability. Senate Majority Leader John Thune is expecting Mitch McConnell to side with Republicans in upcoming votes. McConnell previously voted against three of President Trump's cabinet nominees, including Robert F. Kennedy Jr. The former Senate Republican leader spoke out on Trump's plans for steep tariffs on trade partners. McConnell wrote in a recent op-ed for the Courier-Journal that Trump's tariffs leave lingering concerns for American industry and workers. Thune says McConnell will remain influential in the state GOP conference. Luigi Mangione speaking out for the first time since his arrest. Mangione is accused of killing insurance CEO Brian Thompson in December. On Friday, Mangione released a statement on a website dedicated to his defense saying, quote, "I am overwhelmed by and grateful for everyone who has written me to share their stories and express their support." People have donated over $300,000 to Mangione's defense as he remains incarcerated awaiting trial. Five people are in custody in connection with the disappearance, torture, and murder of a transgender man. Sam Nordquist, originally from Minnesota, was visiting New York in September when he went missing. Police say the suspects tortured Nordquist for months before killing him. New York State Police Captain Kelly Swift said it's one of the most horrific crimes she's ever investigated. All five suspects have been arrested on multiple charges and will remain in custody until their trials begin. Actor Kevin Major Howard has died at the age of 69. Howard has dozens of film and TV credits to his name, but is best known for his portrayal of Rafterman in the movie Full Metal Jacket. Although the exact cause of death is unknown, his family announced Howard died over the weekend in a Las Vegas hospital surrounded by loved ones.
Pull my hair! Oh, there you get the glue away from me!
Go join your friends, you wiggles!
Are you good?
And a sequel to the classic film The Goonies is in the works. Warner Brothers has picked Patsy Ponsaroli to write the movie almost 40 years after the original hit theaters. Steven Spielberg will produce, and Chris Columbus, who wrote the first film, will executive produce. No director is attached to the sequel yet. No plot details have been announced, and it's unclear if all of the original cast will return.
WBSM Sports.
The Boston Celtics back on the court with the Philadelphia 76ers on Thursday, and the Boston Bruins and Anaheim Ducks face off on Saturday, the 22nd.
Now your ABC 6 South Coast forecast.
It's Monday, President's Day here on the South Coast. Mostly sunny and windy for the holiday, a high of 30 degrees. On Tuesday, mostly sunny again, a high of 26. On Wednesday, partly cloudy, a high of 30. And on Thursday, snow possible late with a high of 29. This WBSM News Update is brought to you by Stevie's Wine and Spirits. Look for the purple dot to try before you buy, only at Stevie's Wine and Spirits in Fairhaven. I'm Phil Devitt for WBSM News. Stay up to date with New Bedford's News Talk Station, WBSM, and get all of our content and breaking news alerts with the WBSM app.
All right, we are back with New Bedford City Council President Shane Burgo. Do you know where that little jingle was from?
No.
You're probably too young. That was the CBS special presentation. Oh. So before they would run the Charlie Brown specials or Rudolph or any of that. So when I was looking for little like stings I could put in to come back without playing music, I was like, I need something people remember. So I started playing that and everybody would be like, what is that? It sounds familiar, but I can't think of what it is. So that's what it is. We're getting some people that are bringing up the fact that, you know, because you mentioned that CERTA is free, and they're saying CERTA is not free; it's taxpayer funded, but there's no riding fee to get on. There's no what's the word I'm looking for?
Fair.
Fair. That's the word. Yes,
it's fare free due to the tax. That is correct. Yes.
Which I believe it's the millionaire's tax that's helping to pay for that.
I believe, yes.
And so with
the fair share amendment, yes.
With these public transportation options that we have now, you know, people like you and I, we have cars. So, and most of the places we have to go are not accessible by public transportation, or if they were, it would take us too long to get to them. So, you know, we're going to take our cars, but the problem is there's a lot of folks who don't even have vehicles and don't have another option. So, like, if I can't get to work, if my car breaks down, there's no public transportation that's going to bring me here, especially at that time of day. But for the people who need to utilize it, it's a great service to have.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, you know, maybe we find that there are days that we say to ourselves, oh, we've got some time. I will take the bus today. Or I will take the train to go to Boston because I'd rather not park. But for the most part, you just get so ingrained in that using your car mentality that you don't think of these other options.
Yeah. And, you know, I think I was saying to you off air, too, I do want to be someone who uses public transportation more often. Again, just like you, I often use my car, especially in my new role. It's like I'm zipping around quickly to different meetings. Obviously, I wouldn't really be able to take public transportation to get to this interview on time. I'd have to leave pretty early to map it out. I know, like, my brother uses public transportation to get to work every day. He uses the CERTA bus line. So anytime I talk to him, he knows each bus route. He's very good at that. So if I ever needed to take the bus route, he's the person I would call. Other than that, too, I'm really excited about the South Coast Rail. That is one other public transportation that I have utilized in the past that I'm really looking forward to for the residents of New Bedford. Back when I worked in Boston full time, I would have to drive up to Middleboro Lakeville to use it to get to South Station. So I believe the train will be a great resource for us here in New Bedford. But I also believe, too, here in New Bedford, the CERTA bus line would most likely expand more of their routes if more people were utilizing it, too. Because one of the concerns that I've been seeing for some of our residents, really in Ward 6, too, is the routes only extend so far. They don't go all the way down the peninsula. So some of the residents there, I have heard, reach out to us about if there's possible ways to get more bus routes. But I don't necessarily blame CERTA for that, because in their mindset, it's, well, why would we have bus lines going all the way down there if there's only one person, for example, utilizing this?
Right. Or some days you go down there and there's nobody down there.
Exactly right. So, I think for me, that's one of the, I guess if we're still doing New Year's resolutions, I would probably want to add that for mine is trying to find times when I'm not in a rush, where I have different meetings I have to get to or certain time sensitive events that I have to get to try to find opportunities to take the CERTA bus, just to, one, get familiar with the routes, and also just to be able to not be so dependent on my vehicle and use up the gas emissions and all those other, and take up parking as well.
I mean, there's an app chat message here that says, you know, it seems like the people pushing for public transportation are the people that don't use it. Well, that's fine,
true,
but
yeah.
We want it to be there for the people that do need to use it.
That is true, too. Yeah, so that's what I was thinking about as I, you know, before I was like, yeah, we got to be a walkable city. And then as I'm saying that, I'm getting in my car. But that's a fair criticism. But again, that's also why I think us as counselors, too, when we're having this discussion with the administration about parking requirements, it's challenging for us, especially for the ward counselors who hear the concerns from their constituents about, yes, we need to build more housing. But just as you pointed out, when we talk about the parent who has three children, right now having that one car, that's all fine. And then those kids grow up and they each want their own car. And that's what we're seeing right now. A lot of times is this whole like fleet of vehicles, at one, single residence. It wasn't always that way. Which is great. I'm glad that families are able to afford to buy cars for their children and they don't have to worry about, hey, who has the car this week? And you know, that's how it used to be. I remember back when my brothers were in high school and they would have to beg my grandmother together for the car keys on who's going to take the car that week. And that was always exciting. I remember when my brother Jarrell taught me how to drive for the first time, it was with our family car. We only had one car. So I think we're long past those days. It's like, you know, mom has a car, dad has a car, and then your brother has a starter car and so on and so forth. So that's the challenge we're seeing now. We're in this populated city where everyone has a car. So I think now we're trying to get away from that, and it will take time. We recognize that. But no, I agree with those app chats where it's, you know, practice what you preach, essentially. And I think I'm going to start trying to do that more.
I had to share a car with my father and my sister. And I never had it when I needed it. I tell my sister, like, all right, I timed my work schedule for when you come home, but she'd go off with her friends. They're like, no, I got to get to work. But you know, the other thing too, is that people forget the fact that, you know, it's your tax dollars for the last 30 years didn't go to pay for South Coast Rail. Your tax dollars for the last 30 years went to go pay for commuter rail all over the rest of the state while we were left behind. Mm-hmm. So it's really a matter of, if they all have it, we should have it too. And you've already paid for everybody else to have that kind of connection. We should have that kind of connection too. And then I think you will see a lot of people utilize it, especially now knowing what these routes are going to be, knowing that they're going to have weekend service, knowing that they're going to have trains that leave just before midnight so you can go to events in Boston and come home on the train. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a 90-minute ride, but as I say to people, it's a 90-minute ride where you don't have to do anything.
Yep.
So you could be in the car for 90 minutes leaving the garden after a game just trying to get out of the parking garage, or you could be 90 minutes on the train where you're playing on your phone or taking a nap before you get home.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. And one of the other points that I always like to drive home, pun intended, is is that, you know, it's obviously Boston is the ultimate destination, the end route of South Station, but there's so many stops along the way, you know. Even now they've mentioned the other routes if you want to try to get to Taunton or Fall River. I don't know why you'd ever want to leave New Bedford, right? But but there's so many other stops along the way to Boston, whether it's Bridgewater or Brockton. You know, that's the other part of this too that I want people to recognize, that it's not just about Boston, but all of the other stops along the way that we're connected to, especially when we're talking about economic opportunities. So when you're looking for job advancements, I think a lot of times the challenge is, as I mentioned, my other brother, my brother Marcel, you know, he doesn't drive. He is unable to drive, and he needs public transportation. So a lot of times when he's looking for employment, that is a hindrance. And I think him and many other people, that is a challenge for them, is when you're looking for a job already, there are already limitations. But then when you add on the fact that you can't drive, whether in my brother's case, due to a disability, does this now open up the door for a lot of people who now can say, oh, I can now take the train and get to work?
Yeah.
And so that's also something I'm very excited about and looking forward to.
And I hope people use it enough that they start looking at ways to expand it, because, you know, you can connect, instead of, because if you look at the routes, they go a little bit weird, but maybe connect New Bedford to Plymouth. Mm-hmm. And then you can go from Plymouth to Wareham and take the Cape Flyer over to the Cape. I mean, there's a lot of ways that you could expand the reach of people all over. So then it becomes not just, you know, you and New Bedford getting to these places, but those people now coming to New Bedford because they say, well, let's go, we can go on the train and go there and check it out. So let's go try it. As opposed to, you know, people like, how am I going to drive from New Bedford, from Plymouth to New Bedford? It's such a pain in the ass. Well, if you can get on the train, it's a lot easier.
Yeah. And the more investments we have in the MBTA in general, the better the system will work. We know, because the other criticism I do hear, obviously, about our train system is that it's, you know, constantly failing. You know, God forbid we have any other derailments and things like that. I believe that the Healy Driscoll administration has been addressing that. And as we know, our state auditor, Diana DiZoglio, has done a full audit of the MBTA system. So this is another focus of our state auditor, as well as our governor and lieutenant governor. So I believe their continued investments and the continued investment of our state government in general will just continue to be really fruitful, not just for the South Coast region, but for our entire Commonwealth.
Well, let's take a phone call here. And if you want to call in with a question for Council President Burgo, 508-996-0500. Good morning. You are on with Council President Burgo.
Good morning, Tim. Good morning, Councilor Burgo.
Good morning.
You know, what you're saying basically is the United Nations Agenda 2030. You can read it, but Everybody is going to be forced out of the towns, into cities, into multi-complex units. You're not going to own any property. You're not going to have your own individual car. You're going to be utilizing public transit. This is all part of the UN Agenda 2030 to be implemented on the local level by the global elites who fly around in private jets, who have mega mansions with giant pools, limousines. They're living a high life, and they want you to live very poor and squalid conditions.
That's a very interesting interpretation.
Read it, Agenda 2030. It's what you're saying is right off their playbook. And the other thing is, with the limousine liberals, they want, like I said, private jets and limousines and all of that. And global warming and greenhouse gases. Why don't you just walk around? You know, you forget to get off fossil fuels. Don't even use a car, according to the libs. Would you want to walk around through all of the inclement weather and all of that? Utilize modern technology?
Well, we're trying to improve our inclement weather. That's one of the challenges we face. You're right about that with global warming, but I'm sure you probably don't believe in global warming.
No, I don't. I believe in global cooling.
Well, either way, the weather's
bad.
Because
it was in Time magazine in the late 70s issue. Maybe you can read this, the pseudoscience. But my question to you on a serious note is, what about jobs? I keep talking about housing. Mm-hmm. You can take public transit all you want if you don't have a job to go to. What good does that matter if you're going to be living in one of these homeless shelters with no job and no opportunity, no hope of bettering yourself?
No, but that was one of the things I was just talking about that I agree with. Oh, dropped off. Okay. I'm sure he's still listening. So that's the other thing that I was just mentioning about that I'm looking forward to with the MBTA is that I believe it will open up many opportunities in other locations for people to have access to other job opportunities in other, as I mentioned before, whether it's in Bridgewater or Brockton or Boston. Similar to myself, technically I'm stationed in Boston, although I primarily work from home now. And then even on my days in office, I now am able to utilize one of our offices in New Bedford now. But no, I believe that this, now that we've expanded our access to public transportation, it will open up the doors for so many job opportunities for people that may have been barred due to their lack of access to public transportation. So this is actually going to make it better for people when we talk about economic growth for those here in New Bedford, because we know there aren't many jobs here locally for people when we're talking about high paying jobs. So this will actually, once it does open in March, open up the doors for many people to get to those higher paying jobs that are closer to Boston.
All right, we got to take a break here, but if you want to call in the time we have left, 508-996-0500, we will be right back. All right, we are still with New Bedford City Council President Shane Burgle and still able to take your phone calls and your app chat messages, 508-996-0500. So what about last Thursday's meeting? Anything important that came out of that? Well, I'm sure it's all important, but anything people should know about that came out of that
meeting? City government is very important, but one of the more notable motions that, you know, I wanted to recognize that we'll be hearing in our ordinance committee was a process that we do, special permits for automotive sales and or rentals, body repair, general repair, and light service. It's Chapter 9, Appendix A, Section H of Commercial Motor Vehicle Uses. So the process already goes before the licensing board, and these small businesses here in New Bedford have to pay the licensing board $300 already for the actual license. But then they also, in addition to that, have to come before the city council and pay an application fee of $700.
Wow.
So it just seems very redundant. And I think, as we talked about, during one of my first interviews here, about some of the things that I want to do as council president and working with this council, we want to be very productive. We want to streamline a lot of our processes. So myself and a number of my colleagues are looking to review this and potentially remove the city council as an authority on this in review process, especially because a lot of the review process. The licensing board can do a lot more of a deep dive than the city council can. An applicant comes before us, and the only information we can really review is what the applicant gives us. Mm-hmm. We can't really investigate or really do a deep dive of any of the information, as like the licensing board can run quarry checks and other aspects behind the business. And then also the other aspect of it is, why are we making small businesses pay this much money for a license, and then the renewal process? And then on top of that, they have to come back before the council and do this. And as we know, as I mentioned before, the cogs of government, you know, they come before the city council, we refer it to committee, then they have to wait for it to come onto a committee agenda. Then they come before a committee, they're interviewed and screened. Then it's hopefully referred out of committee back to the city council for final action. Then it's, you know, so it's just back and forth, back and forth.
And that's an annual process?
I believe so. So, if not,
at least it's a repeat process.
Correct.
That
yes.
They have to come back.
I forget how long of the license is for, but yeah. So it's not something that's just indefinite. So it's something that does recur, whether annually or biannually. But so that's something we're looking to change. So that's something I would say was notable from Thursday's meeting. Again, that was not any action has been taken. Again, it was referred to ordinance committee. Again, the wheels of government move slow, but that's something I believe we will work to change to make this government flow a lot easier and make it easier for our small businesses to thrive here.
And we are getting closer to having a licensing board.
Yes, we are. So that's this week, the committee meetings people should be looking out for. Tuesday, February 18th is our appointments and briefings meeting. That meeting will begin, as we talked about previously, with citizens input time, which is very underutilized. I encourage anyone who wants to come speak to the council to discuss any business that you believe that we're ignoring or things that you don't think we're addressing. Call our office and say, hey, my name is Joe Schmo from 123 ABC Street, you know, wherever you're from in New Bedford, and say, I'd like to speak to the council about X, Y, and Z. They'll put you on the next appointments and briefing agenda. We have three people signed up as of right now, and that will, it never exceeds more than 30 minutes of that meeting. So that's how we start off appointments and briefing. Very underutilized, so I'm going to mention that again any opportunity I can. Also, we have the Clark's Point Neighborhood Group meeting this week, which I think I mentioned. I want to always mention the neighborhood groups that happen. So that's on Wednesday, February 19th at 6:15 p.m. And that's at 1000 South Rodney French Boulevard. So that's happening this week. And at that appointments and briefing meeting, if I can go back to that, sorry, I keep jumping around. I know we're limited time here, but we have Richard McHugh's appointment, which we know has to do with the licensing board. So hopefully that will be referred out with a favorable recommendation, which, again, once it's referred out of committee, final action will not take place until the council meeting on February 27th. And then hopefully if he is approved, he'll be sworn in and we'll finally have enough members to have the license board back up and running. As of this past council meeting, the third member, or third, I should say, the final nomination of Jimmy D was finally referred to us from the Mitchell administration. So that was referred to the appointments and briefing committee. So eventually the chair, which is Naomi Carney, will have that meeting set up. So Jimmy D will be screened, and then hopefully we'll be back at a full complement for our licensing board, and we won't have another situation like we're in, but time will tell in regards to that.
Well, and with a board with people that will be on now for a number of years.
Yeah, especially because the licensing board is a 6-year term. I forget how far in term the current member is in, but essentially once we have the full three members, this issue won't occur again. But the other thing I want to note too is the way that our boards and commissions are designed is even when your term expires and someone hasn't replaced you yet, you technically are able to continue serving until you are replaced. It just so happens in this scenario, the people who were serving, they resigned and they just didn't want to continue, which we can't force someone to continue. Right. So that's the only reason why we've essentially ended up in the situation. But there are a lot of other notable nominations that night. So I encourage people, you can watch it, our meetings live You can go online to watch our meetings through the city website. If you don't want to come in person, but that meeting will be in person in the city council chamber at 7 p.m. on February 18th. We also have our finance committee meeting on Wednesday, February 19th. That will be a remote meeting on Zoom. So that one won't be in person. And then we have our February 20th city property meeting, and that one also will be via Zoom. So those two will not be in the council chamber. The February 20th meeting for city property, we will be discussing the Advanced Manufacturing Center, the commonly referred to as AMC, not the movie location, but that one probably a lot of people will want to watch or attend, especially in the Ward 3 area. So that one also, I think, very highly anticipated. But those are the committee meetings for this week.
AMC, you make advanced manufacturing better.
Yeah.
All right, we got to take our final break. We will be right back. All right, we have just enough time to say goodbye to everybody. And next week we'll be back with the city council president next Monday at 8 a.m.
Yes, looking forward to it. I hope everyone else enjoys their President's Day and enjoy it.
And make a plan to come out and hang out with me tomorrow morning.